if the Winters Doctrine ends up being overruled and a new precedent set, it could have fairly significant implications for the future.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 68, and I think it's going to be a good one. So on March 20th, last week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Arizona versus Navajo Nation. So this is a dispute over Colorado River water rights, which is the topic du jour given what's happening out west. Court's decision could have significant implications for water rights of tribes across the country, including the Western U.S. I'm joined today by Bluefield Research Director Greg Goodwin to talk about recently released analysis of federal funds allocated by way of the Indian Health Service, the IIJA, or Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act. And we've also got another report coming out on the Colorado River Basin itself. So this is a good time to be talking about these issues, among others. So before we bring Greg in, I just do want to raise one key point. Last week was World Water Day. It was held at the United Nations and in observance on the 22nd of March, 2023. And it highlights the importance of fresh water, not just in the Western U.S., which we're going to talk about today, but all over the world. The day is used to advocate for sustainable management of freshwater resources. For that reason, Bluefield Research has been collaborating with WaterAid, an international nonprofit, to make clean water, access to sanitation, and good hygiene a reality for everyone. WaterAid has been working on clean water sanitation projects for more than 40 years across 34 countries. We are encouraging listeners to the Future of Water podcast to be part of the solution by learning more at wateraid.org. And making a contribution, no matter how big or small, it all makes a difference. So give it a shot. So with that being said, let's bring in Greg Goodwin to talk about Western water, tribal infrastructure investment, and what's happening at the Supreme Court. All right. So I'm joined here today by Greg Goodwin. So Greg, how are things?
Hey, Reese. They're doing pretty well. There's a lot been going on recently. We just had the UN conference last week, and lots of different news about PFAS and other things occurring. So, you know, never a dull moment.
Yeah, truth be told, you know, I was traveling last week in Montreal and Utah. You were in New York at the UN conference. So we quite honestly haven't even caught up on that. So for everybody else, we'll catch up after this recording and then talk about maybe some new topics going forward related to World Water Day, which happened last week. But one of the things, while we were away last week, the production team was working on some research that we had put out on tribal lands and water management in the Western U.S. and IIJA. And Greg, you played a part in that. So there have been lots of discussions on this podcast and the interweb about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act in the U.S. But one area that's gotten less coverage overall is the funding allocation to the Indian Health Service. And because there's a recent Supreme Court hearing last week on Arizona versus Navajo Nation, but also our recent research that we put out, I thought it'd be a good time to have you on this podcast to talk about some of those details, what's happening, because I know we have some clients who are interested in sort of tribal nations and considering it as an opportunity for opportunities, water investment, but also, you know, equipment supply, engineering, design, services, et cetera. So why, rather than hear me blather on, why don't we get some details from you? What, give us a little bit of background in the context of IIJA and the IHS and how much funding has been earmarked or at least planned on going towards the agency.
Sure. Thanks, Reese. So IHS, as you mentioned, stands for Indian Health Services, and it's one of the many sort of sub-agencies that exists under the Department of Health and Human Services. It's an agency that's been around since the 1950s, and its main purview is to, you know, overlook health outcomes for the nation's 574 federally recognized tribes. So there's kind of the personal health element of it, which is, it gets into hospitals and clinics and so forth, and is really looking at kind of individual outcomes. And then there's an infrastructure side of it too, that deals with sanitation and water needs. And that side of it is probably more relevant for this discussion. So under the IIJA funding from November 2021, when that bill passed, there's $3.5 billion that is specifically earmarked for this sort of infrastructure, kind of bucket of funding that happens under IHS. So it's $700 million each year that is being added to basically to either upgrade or, do rehabilitations or infrastructure from scratch within sort of Indian tribal land. And it's significant because IHS has traditionally been thought of as being rather underfunded on a per capita basis compared to other similar types of programs that happen under the federal government. So, in real dollar terms, it's a historically high amount of money that's going to be allocated to get the infrastructure for wastewater and water up to speed in the nation's, many different areas that have federally recognized tribal people living there.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting was in the research that you had done, the Government Accountability Office or GAO had put out a report and showed that, in its findings that funding levels for, I guess it would be IHS would be, or at least recipients of that funding was, $4,000 per capita, which is way below what we see for other agencies such as Federal Bureau of Prisons. I think it was 50% less than that and one third less of what recipients are getting from Medicare. So I think you emphasize that as part of the research you put out, but let's talk a little bit about the funding and where the funding is going for IHS. I mean, it's, I think part of that also is do we consider this disadvantaged community? And I think IIJA has put a real emphasis on disadvantaged communities. So give us a little bit of perspective on sort of how the dollars are going to be spent or where it's going.
Sure. So each year, IHS, in conjunction with the tribes, puts together a list of sort of the sanitation needs across the country under IHS's 12 different sort of administrative areas. And that list goes to Congress, and there are hearings in the relevant sort of congressional committees and subcommittees about how funding will take place. And it's sort of it's a prioritized list that identifies project need by immediacy and then also by the level of deficiency that may occur in a specific area. So there's a pretty wide range of how the projects break down. Some of them are fairly minor in terms of needing minor upgrades or maybe some maintenance help. And then there are areas, particularly like Navajo Nation and up in Alaska, where the population is so sparse that they often don't have centralized water and wastewater facilities. There's a lot of water trucking that goes around there. And so there's a pretty wide range of need and how that money is going to be allocated. And so through a series of different kind of parameters that are part of the reporting process, they get prioritized per IHS administrative area and by specific type of need. So there's going to be a pretty wide range of how the dollars get allocated. But I think, one of the larger takeaways from speaking to some folks within IHS about this is it really is kind of it's an effort on the part of the federal government to really get some of these areas that don't have like the core infrastructure that's needed up to speed. So there's like a backlog of projects that haven't been really addressed in adequate measure over the last, however long. And over the next 5 years with this pretty large infusion of funding, there's the goal of really trying to get some of those projects up to speed. So I think that's one of the sort of the core significance of it is I think we're going to see more activity happening in the next 5 to 10 years than has happened, in sort of recent memory regarding sort of infrastructure and sort of rehabilitations in tribal lands.
Yeah. And I think you had even mentioned that the IHS deficiency list had 1,500 projects or so that were in various stages of need. So that's obviously where a lot of the dollars are going. You mentioned Navajo Nation. Navajo Nation is in the news, at least in some circles, as far as the Supreme Court argument that was argued last week. What's the background of the Arizona versus Navajo Nation, and what is that? What are the implications of this court case?
Sure. So just a little bit of background. So Navajo Nation straddles three borders of U.S. states. So there's most of it is in Arizona, but it does go over into New Mexico and up into Utah slightly. The Little Colorado River, which is a tributary to the main Colorado River, goes through Navajo territory. It's a huge land area. If you look at it on a map, it's larger than most of New England. And so the basis for this legal dispute is a Supreme Court precedent from 1908 called the Winters Doctrine. Essentially, when the U.S. made a treaty with the Navajo people to set up Navajo Nation as a sovereign independent nation from the United States, there's no specific mention of water within that treaty. But under this doctrine called the Winters Doctrine, which was decided in 1908, there's an implied acknowledgement of that water is necessary for a homeland to be viable. So under sort of that framework, that judicial sort of framework, there's been sort of this acknowledgement that the U.S. government has to make sure that in treaties with tribes that there's adequate water for them to be able to kind of function within their sovereign area. And so there's certain aspects of that are being challenged by both the federal government and the state of Arizona, because the Navajo Nation is making the claim essentially that it's the U.S. government's obligation to identify, protect, and deliver the water necessary for the tribe to function. And the state of Arizona and the U.S. government are saying that the only obligation that is on that part is just that the tribe has the right to access water. So that precedent of the Winters Doctrine is being tested now in terms of U.S. government sort of responsibility and obligation to the Navajo Nation. And the oral arguments were heard last week, I think, in the Supreme Court. And obviously the decision won't be decided until sometime in the summer, but from sort of the aftermath pieces that I've read, it seems to be a fairly split court in terms of how that's going to play out. So if the Winters Doctrine ends up being overruled and a new precedent set, it would mean essentially that in areas where there's dispute about water in sovereign Indian territory, that the U.S. government's role in measuring the amount of water, making sure it's there, could be altered to mean something else, essentially, that there wouldn't be an obligation on the part of the federal government to make sure that adequate resources are available. It would mean more just that there is access to a specific source. So it could have fairly significant implications for the future in terms of how the law is applied to disputes between either a state and a sovereign Indian territory or the U.S. government and Indian territory.
And it comes at sort of a unique time, right? If you want to call it a perfect storm, right? You've got this Navajo Nation versus Arizona. That's already been argued this past week. You've got the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So you've got lots of dollars going to building out infrastructure, water, wastewater infrastructure for these tribes. And then lastly, one thing that can't be overlooked, particularly in this region, Western U.S., is the Colorado River Basin and what's happening there. There's the Bureau of Land Management. They're basically mandating that these seven states within the basin come up with some revised plan, 2 to 4 million acre feet volume, I guess, of cuts to their usage from the river. And the Indian reservations play a key part in that. Can I assume that this case has a real impact on that as well? Because to date, the Native Americans, they haven't had a seat at the table, right? You know, when it comes to water rights and allocation.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be a significant part of that going forward. I mean, while the tribes do have certain senior rights on water that exists, one of the issues that comes up is that, you know, as mentioned before, Navajo Nation is gigantic, and I don't think there's a full accounting of how much water they tend to use. Certainly, in comparison to the surrounding states that have pretty good measurement on what their water use is. In some of the tribal lands, I don't think that number is quite as robust in terms of how it's measured. And so, you know, moving forward, how that plays out, how that gets measured, understanding the level of use that happens in certain territories, and then, you know, what the U.S. government's obligation is around that. There could be sort of further disputes around what, you know, Navajo Nation or another tribal land claims is theirs, and what, you know, the states think is their right. And, you know, I think I could foresee certain future disputes around that. And then, you know, depending on how this case is resolved, the way that the federal government would respond to that could differ quite a bit based on whether the current precedent holds or whether it's abdicated for a new one based on how this plays out. So yeah, there's a lot that hinges on this, particularly in the Southwest and sort of the scarcity of the Colorado River and all its sort of tributaries and the basin as a whole. So a lot to definitely monitor as this goes forward.
And, you know, 2 points to add. Navajo Nation, what we're talking, how many people are in Navajo Nation itself?
I think it's around 170,000 people. So it's one of the larger, both by land area and kind of population in the U.S.
And to your point, you know, there's a lack of sort of inventorying or, you know, usage data from the Indian reservations. But as far as rights go, or at least shares of the Colorado River in aggregate, I mean, they hold 20 to 25% of the total, you know, rights of the river. And it does vary widely by state, right? You get some states where there's, you know, it's as, I think, like, you know, upper basin like Wyoming, I think it's 0%. So it's not a big issue at all. But when you start looking at New Mexico, you know, the Indian reservations hold about 77% of the total. And Arizona, to the point about Arizona versus Navajo Nation, but also as a whole, we're looking at 68% of total allocations would go or are taken by the Indian reservation. So if there's so much competition for the river as it exists, and so if there's more dollars going into the Indian reservations, whether it be through the omnibus bill, the IIJA, et cetera, and it builds out and they do start using more water in various ways, that competition increases, but yet they have a greater share of the total. So something's ultimately got to give, probably more so than 2 to 4 million acre feet. Any perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, as you sort of mentioned, there's a number of different parties here and a number of different sort of moving parts that all have to navigate a compact that was signed over 100 years ago and does not really reflect sort of the usage on the ground anymore in terms of the Colorado River and its, you know, end uses. So yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty complex and sort of messy development moving forward in terms of how water gets allocated. And as if Navajo Nation or other sort of relevant Indian tribes are under greater development and make more use of that water and their competing claims, probably more sort of legal disputes that result as of that. And then potential opportunities for selling rights as well. If there's excess water that is not needed specifically across Navajo that they could sell to, you know, other areas. So a further accounting of exactly what's being used in all different areas seems to be kind of a net benefit to the situation that's, you know, in the works to better understand. So I guess that's at least one sort of positive of the situation of the information being more robust in terms of, you know, how usage is looking across different parties.
Nice. Well, given what's happening in Washington and the Supreme Court, what's your feeling? Do you think it's going to tilt one way or the other as far as the ruling goes?
So, I mean, I only know what I've read on a few different, you know, kind of legal blogs and so forth. I mean, the people who listen to the oral arguments seem to think it's fairly evenly split, might be sort of a 5-4 decision one way or the other. It's interesting, you know, for the way that the court composition has evolved and is at this current moment. You know, it's typically thought of as sort of a 6-3 type of, you know, if you want to say conservative versus liberal, excuse me, breakdown. Neil Gorsuch in particular has kind of a history of siding more with the tribes over the U.S. and taking sort of legal disputes over treaties and so forth more seriously or more to the letter than some of his colleagues that are considered to be on his side of the aisle. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think it's kind of might be premature for people to make a prediction, but I think it's going to be probably a 5-4 decision either way.
Well, in any case, I think in whether that's positive or negative, I guess it depends on where you're coming from, but there's a lot of money going towards these tribal nations, right? So if anything, from the get-go of this conversation, you know, and one reason we're talking about this is there's an opportunity there for infrastructure build-out. So, I mean, as a whole, the outlook is better than ever for these tribal nations and water vendors and service providers looking at these markets. I mean, as I think you said in your research, from 2021 to 2022, we're looking at about a 434% increase in additional funding or funding to these nations. So, you know, would you say the outlook's pretty strong?
Yeah, I mean, I would say in relative terms, definitely. It's looking like there's more attention being paid to the nation's federally recognized tribes than any time sort of in recent history. And I think that kind of, you know, it reflects sort of what this administration has sort of set up. I mean, Deb Haaland is famously kind of the first, you know, Native person to be elevated to a cabinet level. She's the Department of Interior Secretary. And then sort of in a different, you know, this isn't under specifically IHS kind of framing, but, you know, there's under the omnibus bill that was passed at the end of last year, there were advanced appropriations that were also made to different sort of for IHS as well. And I mean, I think that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of the agency's existence that Congress and the president have agreed to give sort of advance funding beyond a specific year, so that it's not every year, you know, trying to get a certain amount of money. There's forethought put into longer term thinking that's gone into how things will be developing in those areas. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right. Well, with that being said, why don't we wrap it up there? And to your point, you know, now we've got about a 5 to 8 year runway as far as opportunity goes across this market segment. So we look forward to seeing how that rolls out. So Greg, thanks again for jumping on this. And I look forward to seeing what the ruling is. I anticipate it's going to be midsummer, will be later in the year when the ruling of the Supreme Court case comes out.
Yeah, I think sometime in the summer when they usually release the opinion. So maybe sometime between June and September or so. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens for sure.
All right. Well, thanks, May, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Reese.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. Before we sign off, if you are in Boston, let us know. We can set up a meeting at our office. We're 10 minutes from the airport, 5 minutes from the train, and 30 seconds from the subway, for what that's worth. So let us know and we'll be happy to set up a meeting or just go grab a cup of coffee and talk water. Please subscribe to Future Water Podcast and give us a review. And if you have any comments, questions, topic ideas, send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. We're doing this for you. So help us help you. And lastly, tell a friend about this podcast, and why not tell them about how interesting the water industry is? There's a lot happening from Supreme Court to the Western U.S. and the Colorado River to federal funding to you name it. Lots of stuff happening. So they might be interested in this. All right. Well, that's a wrap. So this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Be well, be safe, and take care.